Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Coast to Coast Combat Hour. I'm your host, Matthew Hawkins, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Ed Carbajal. Ed, tell the fans what we got for them this week.
Well, it is a unique week because we got the big boxing super fight between Francis Ngannou and Anthony Joshua, so we have to bring in our boy, haven't had him on in a while from the last round podcast, Daniel Zaldivar. Danny, what's up, man? Welcome back.
What's up, fellas? I think it's been a while since I've been on here with you guys, so it's always cool to come and check up on you guys. So I appreciate it. I was supposed to be on with my partner, my co-host Mike, but he couldn't make it. So hopefully in the next time, it's me and him at the same time. So let's get into it, boys.
So I noticed you got the blurred background there. Is that to hide all the Saudi riches because you're in Riyadh? Yeah.
Because we use Zoom, so like, I was trying to figure out how to. I haven't used StreamYard in a long time, and I was trying to see how to take it off. I mean, that blue thing you see in the background is the Dodgers.
Yeah, see, I mean, that?
You can see it right now. See, check it out.
I thought that was all the Saudi gold behind you that you were hiding.
It's a Dodgers poster. Yeah, it's just Dodgers poster. I mean, there's a TV over here, so there's nothing really. But I was trying to figure out how to take the blur off, but I couldn't figure it out. So it's not a big deal.
It's all good, man. So this weekend, we have Ngannou and Joshua, probably something that, I mean, you can tell me as the expert, I don't think you saw that coming down the pike. I know I didn't with Ngannou going in there with Tyson Fury prior to this. Why don't you kind of update us on how we ended up where we're at right now?
Well, I think if you really want to dig into it, I think McGregor was the one who started this whole thing in motion in 2017. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously McGregor and Mayweather are two huge names, not just in combat sports, but in mainstream. So when they made that event and they got all that attention and made all that money, and then McGregor's life, he was already doing well before that, but he went into the stratosphere with that one. That's what started the after effect. That's when you started seeing. You know, and maybe he had a lot to do with maybe even some YouTubers coming in, you know, who kind of noticed like, oh, well, if this guy can come in, you know, maybe we can kind of jump in. So when Fury and Ngannou was announced, I know this weekend is Anthony Joshua and Ngannou, but when Fury and Ngannou was announced, I mean, I think by then I was already numb to it. So I wasn't really that surprised, especially with. And I'm sure you guys can talk about it more than I can, when Ngannou and the UFC having their beef and you know, him leaving the UFC, and then Dana White doing all these interviews saying, oh, you know, I don't know what he wants, and, you know, kind of going back and forth. And then Ngannou saying in some interviews and some articles that he wanted to go into boxing. I mean, obviously, because, you know, the pay structure in MMA, boxing, you know, they want to dip into that pot of gold. Yeah. So. I wasn't surprised. And then he knocked down Tyson Fury, so that gave him a lot of credibility with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. You know, and they say Tyson Fury wasn't as prepared as he should be. I mean, he still won the fight, but I don't think Ngannou, maybe I'm wrong, he is a competitor, but I don't think he really cared if he won or lost, you know, right? Especially after that, he got that knockdown. He won the night with that knockdown, because he was already going in as the underdog. And he's doing something that all these fighters, Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua, and Deontay Wilder, who are arguably the biggest money makers of the last, you know, 8-9 years in the heavyweight division, mm-hmm. who they've been trying to fight each other for how long? I mean, Wilder and Fury obviously fought, but
yeah.
And Ngannou comes in from the outside and fights arguably the two biggest money makers in the heavyweight division, in Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua, back to back. So, you know, you got to give him credit for that. He's making some life changing money. So,
yeah,
what can you really say about it?
Yeah, I mean I feel like that's what makes him kind of like, that's what makes it interesting, is because like, it's so hard to get the fights that you want to see in boxing. You know, negotiating them seems to be so difficult, and it's happening in MMA too, but. You know, for Ngannou to leave the way that he did, he's already checked off, or he's about to check off of the biggest, one of the biggest, second biggest name after Tyson Fury, like you said, it was Deontay Wilder, Fury, and now Joshua that he's fighting this weekend. So it's like, it's almost like he can get all three without any problem, as long as it happens in Saudi Arabia. You know, it seems like they can make whatever fights they want there. Obviously they have deep pockets to do it, but it just seems like Ngannou has the secret sauce on getting himself where he wants to be, especially getting out of the UFC and leaving as their champion. And kind of like, I mean, it's a very good flex on his part. Really quick, just to backtrack, because you mentioned the Fury fight. Well, what was your, I mean, people seem to be still divided on who really won that fight. I know the knockdown counted for a lot. People were saying Fury looked bad, but like, what was your take on that fight?
I think Fury won the fight. I never disputed it. But like I said, that I mentioned earlier, Ngannou getting that knockdown, you know, took away any weight behind the victory that Fury had. Mm-hmm. So whether you were on board with the victory before Tyson Fury or not, the fact that you had a guy, even though he was the heavyweight champion in the biggest MMA sport in the world at the UFC at one point, he's a huge guy, you know, 280 mm-hmm. pounds of muscle. People looked at him as not a boxer, and he comes in from the outside in his first professional boxing fight and knocks down the lineal heavyweight champion of the world, mm-hmm. You know, who beat Wilder officially twice, but he should have beat him three times. That first one, he should have got that victory. But yeah, I wasn't really on board with like, oh, Fury looked bad. And, you know, I think Fury did underestimate Ngannou mm-hmm. going into the fight and looked at it like, oh, I'm getting this payday from Saudi Arabia. You know, I'm sure he trained, but he obviously didn't train as hard as he did for like the first Wilder fight or the second Wilder fight. Yeah. And maybe that was his downfall. Maybe that's why he kind of slipped a little bit and he got knocked down by somebody like Francis Ngannou. So, but yeah, I still think he won. You know, he's a talented guy. But just like they always say, if he goes to MMA and fights MMA rules against Francis mm-hmm. Ngannou,
yeah,
who's going to look like the amateur, you know?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the fight was extremely close. I was more impressed with Ngannou actually surviving through 10 rounds. I know in 7, 8, 9-ish, he faded, and then he kind of came back strong in the 10th specifically, I think. Or maybe it was the 9th, and then the 10th was real close. I can't exactly recall, but he did have a comeback from the middle rounds where he's kind of faded. I said this when it happened. It was such a close fight. And it was in boxing. Boxing was not going to allow Tyson Fury to lose a decision. If the same thing had happened in UFC and Tyson Fury showed up and shocked the world and went to a close decision with Ngannou, MMA judges were going to give it. It's behind the scenes. It was because it was looked at as a carnival. Like when I went into it, it was like, okay, I'm going to watch 60 seconds of boxing. I'm going to watch Tyson Fury knock him out and we're going to move on. And then it turned into a spectacle as it unfolded really. Obviously, Ngannou's picked up a lot of credibility among MMA fighters for stepping into there and kind of really hyping him up. Is he getting any love in the boxing community? How do they see him? Do they see him as a circus act? Do they see him just as a big bad dude who's got a massive punch and did that? Or is it like, okay, we're just going to wait for him to get folded by Joshua and close this chapter?
I think that, like we talked about it, we recorded our podcast yesterday, last night, and we touched on it a little bit. Actually, not a little bit. We dove into it. But from like the temperature check we've gotten by talking to other people in boxing, whether it's fans or their media members, I don't think that they really bought into Francis Ngannou as a boxer yet. Mm-hmm. But I still think that they're still intrigued because of that knockdown that he gave to Fury.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a freak, you know, the guy, like I mentioned, he's like 280 pounds, full pure muscle. Like the guy's huge. So I think that there's going to be a lot of people tuning in this weekend, which is the fight. I believe here in the United States is on Friday. It's not even Saturday. So that's one thing that, that Eddie Hearn of Matchroom Boxing, who promotes Anthony Joshua, kept saying in interviews this week, saying it's on Friday, because people might tune in Saturday. Hey, where's the fight?
Oh, looking for it, yeah.
But I still think there's enough people intrigued about Francis Ngannou where they're going to tune in this weekend, not only because of the Fury knockdown that he got, but he's also facing, you know, Anthony Joshua is probably the biggest moneymaker in the heavyweight division of the last, you know, 7-8 years. So, and he obviously has a lot of UK fans. He's British, so he's going to get a lot of attention over there, especially. So I still think that this weekend, you know, if he knocks down Joshua like he did Fury, even if he loses, I mean, that's another shot of credibility to him, you know? So even if he lasts the entire, you know, the entire 10 rounds or 12 rounds, I'm not entirely sure how many rounds this fight this weekend is going to be. But Joshua's been a lot more timid ever since he fought Andy Ruiz in New York City. Ever since then, he's been a lot more timid where he fights you on the outside. You know, he doesn't dive in or rush you as much. I mean, he still has those tendencies, but, you know, regardless if Francis Ngannou is not a full-fledged professional boxer, he's still a fighter, a combat sports fighter with a ton of muscle and a ton of power. So, you know, it's just like, I'm sure you guys have a saying, you know, just one punch can change the whole fight. You know, there was a fight this past weekend in Verona, New York. I don't know if you guys caught it. It was on ESPN. The co-main event was this gentleman, Raymond Ford, who's from New Jersey, from Ed's neck of the woods, I believe. And he was losing the whole fight. And in the 12th round, with about 7 seconds left, he got the TKO stoppage and became the featherweight world champion. So, you know, you can lose the whole fight, just like you guys know, covering MMA, same thing. And then in the last couple seconds, boom, make a change and you become the victor.
Yeah, man, the puncher's chance is definitely, you know, the what if factor is what, like you referenced the 2017 McGregor Mayweather, that what if factor, that's a big selling point for whether, regardless of the rule set, seems to happen more in boxing with these like exhibition-y super freak show fights or whatever you want to categorize this particular event as. But I do think that that's the draw, especially referencing the Fury knockdown. I'm curious to see how he does it again, because Joshua, if you look at their build, like they're both kind of, you know, big muscular guys. They're both fairly like they're not old, I guess. I mean, for their age in the sport, they're still kind of in their prime years. So I feel like that's what kind of makes this more interesting, but it's still under boxing rules. And Joshua takes Ngannou more seriously than Fury did. And we see something different this weekend, but where it's happening, you mentioned the time zone and everything happening on Friday. You know, this Riyadh season thing that they've been doing over there in Saudi Arabia started in 2019. I'm wondering, like, since they started making these high profile boxing events, what's the temperature check with the boxing fans when these Riyadh season Saudi events get booked? Does the reaction come out off surprise? Like, how did this get done so easy here versus through regular, you know, venues and stuff like that? I mean, or is it the same reaction we have? Like, oh, it's the Saudi deep pockets. Like, what's the boxing world's reaction to these Saudi like big money fights?
I think they're starting to get used to it. The hardcore section of the boxing fan. There's a section that is always going to be against it, because of the politics involved, you know, with countries and, you know, the oil and, you know, the deeper roots of everything that happens over there. So there's people who are never going to be on board with it. But, you know, I'm sure like you guys know, it's here to stay, you know, this country has deep pockets, you know, and boxing, has always had these, you know, network and promotional, partnerships, and you know, especially the last, you know, 9-10 years, you know, the fighter purses have been so extravagant. You know, we're talking about I don't know if you guys have been following Canelo Alvarez lately, but you know, there's news breaking the last 2 weeks that he had a deal with Al Heyman and Premier Boxing Champions, and then that, you know, reportedly they split because they couldn't agree on terms. And then that, now reportedly they're negotiating again or whatever. But, you know, promotional companies traditionally have always jumped from broadcaster to broadcaster. And a lot of broadcasters, TV broadcasters, especially primarily in the United States, are hesitant to get involved with boxing because of the money. You know, that it's a lot of money to spend, especially on high profile fighters. So the profit margin is very slim, if anything. So Saudi Arabia coming in with the deep pockets, like you guys said, you know, they don't care if they lose money because they have so much of it. You know, it's like they have what they have, boxing over there. They have UFC has went over there, I believe. And then professional wrestling, the WWE has went over there, has had an agreement with them.
Soccer, golf.
You know, like what was that golf? Like they created, like, I don't know if it was
LIV
or in the Middle East. They created their own golf.
Yeah, the LIV is I forget the
yeah, Live Golf.
Yeah,
Live Golf. And then didn't the PGA Tour here in the United States, like at first they were like, oh, you know, they're different, but then they ended up combining because it's like, well, I think they realized, how are we going to compete with these guys when their pockets don't end?
Yeah.
So,
and especially, you know, I was actually talking about that with a friend of mine that's really into golf, and the money they have to draw in the players, that the high profile golf players, you know, it's the reason why I think it's so easy for them to make their fights in boxing. Cause it's like, if somebody has this, if money's an issue and they want to make the fight there in Riyadh, then obviously they're just going to be like, yeah, sure, you got it. Because we have the, you know, we can afford to pay you whatever it is you want. But I'm wondering like if it's the broadcasting side of things or the promoter side, like where they're kind of like, trying to like just because promoter, I know in boxing and MMA it's vastly different because the Ali Act and all the stuff that MMA can and can't do versus what boxing is able to do. I'm just wondering if boxing promoters are as eager to go there as MMA. Like there was a race between the UFC. The UFC hasn't been there yet. It was PFL. But the UFC was supposed to be there, and the event they just had this past weekend was the one that was supposed to be there. So the PFL has had the bragging rights to be the first MMA event there. But
where was Fight Island at?
That's in
United Arab Emirates.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. So it just seems like I don't know. It just seems like there's a lot of people that want to control things, versus, you know, just saying yes to money. So I wonder how much of it is ego versus being greedy. You know what I mean? Like I don't know if you see that in boxing, but I'm seeing it a lot in MMA. I just see like a lot of there's a lot of greed going around versus like making the fans happy. And I know Matt can speak on that too, because he's not going to as many events as he used to.
No, but it's funny. I mean, you bring up politics as obviously political politics, but I do think that there's something to be said for maybe going there to avoid the commission politics and the stuff that goes on in the States here. Like, the UFC would not have allowed Ngannou to fight Fury in Vegas. This fight with Joshua would not take place in Vegas. The commission would shut it down. Same reason bare knuckle fighting is not legal, but flat fighting is. There's this. Now, maybe they could do it in New York. Maybe they could have done it in Texas. They definitely could have done it in Texas. But I mean, you're looking back. When you look back, I know we're going back 2 decades practically now. But I mean, you literally had the Nevada commission say that Mark Hunt couldn't fight Butterbean in Pride because Mark Hunt did, or Butterbean didn't have enough MMA experience, or, you know, and it was like, okay, so that was before the UFC owned Pride, although they were looking to buy it at that time. So there's a long history of, especially the Nevada commission, kind of nixing anything that might go against the Fertittas at the time and now Endeavor. So I think the politics of going there, maybe it just being about money, might be refreshing. Now we're just talking you know, money, which obviously every country can speak on, and every person. So it just seems like a much, much easier kind of thing. Do you know what the purses for this fight are scheduled to be for Ngannou? They talk about him going back to MMA. I've been a long, I'm a year in of saying he will never show up in PFL with the money that he's getting right now. Have they said what they're due to make this upcoming weekend?
You know what? I think we touched on it yesterday. Mike, I think, talked about it from what he read. I forgot what exactly it was, but I mean, it's a safe bet. They're making a ton of money. You know,
it's 20-ish million though for Ngannou, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Yeah,
right?
I believe so. Yeah, they're making a ton of money. You know, Anthony Joshua has already, you know, even before fighting in Saudi Arabia, he was already making a ton of money on his own, selling out Wembley Stadium and all these soccer stadiums in the UK. So you know, he's the cash. Anthony Joshua is arguably the second. Arguably the second biggest financial draw in boxing behind Canelo Alvarez. You know, some people might say, you know, it's Gervonta Tank Davis and some other people, but you know, I'd probably say it's Anthony Joshua, you know, on that scale behind Canelo.
Yeah. I feel like it's the hardcore boxing guys that'll lean Tank Davis over versus what, you know, versus what you're saying. But I think it depends on the fan that you asked that question to, you know what I mean?
Right.
But I made a note to just mention this really quick because just today, MMA Fighting published an article. Adam Martin spoke with Don Davis of the PFL, and I don't know why Don Davis tried to make this sound like he was bragging because talking about if we ever see Ngannou MMA again, he says today he'll wait until 2025 for him to make his PFL debut. Because obviously, if he does well in this, and then he gets to go down the laundry list of big name heavyweights every Riyadh season, we might never, like Matt said, we might never see him. So I just thought that was worth mentioning because you kind of touched on it there.
Do you guys know like any particulars of his agreement with PFL? I mean, like, it seems like he had all the leverage in that deal, right? So he's like, hey, you know, when I'm ready, I'll come to you.
Yeah. I mean, and that seems to be more true, especially with that news that came out today. From what I've seen, it's like, and from what we've seen, I mean, we talked about it last week when we talked about the PFL versus Bellator, you know, they had John Jones there. Henan Fajeda won the event, and so it's supposed to be next in line to face Ngannou in MMA. And they didn't even bother getting him. Like, he left before the thing it was like, everyone noticed that he was out as soon as the event was over. Like you know, they set a decision. And Ngannou was out, and you would think somebody would be say, hey, you know, do a face off or no. And I don't know if that's a power move by him. Like, maybe Ngannou's smarter than we think he is. And he was just like, no, you guys are going to, you know, you guys are going to play the game the way I want to play it. You know, Dana White. And then again, Dana White, if you don't do what he wants you to do, he'll drag you through the dirt. But maybe there's some truth about him being hard to negotiate with, too. I mean, because stuff like that, if these are the guys you're in business with, because don't forget, he's supposed to be on their board to make PFL Africa or whatever they're supposed to be doing. So it's like maybe he's flexing. I mean, I maybe he flexes a lot, especially you keep throwing money at him and he keeps getting what he wants. Why wouldn't you flex?
I think he had a fair contract written with them. Mm-hmm. I know he had language to like the minimum his opponent can make is $2 million. So he had a lot of leverage written in to like make sure that he took care of whoever he fought in PFL. Mm-hmm. I think he had the out clause, not an out clause, but I think he had a boxing clause which allowed him to seek a boxing match fight. And I think PFL was okay with that because I think just like 99% of the world, they thought Ngannou would go do that. He'd make a decent payday. He'd get his ass cleaned and then he'd come back to MMA where he's king. I think that's what they thought. And then they gave him the Fury fight, and all of a sudden he cashes a $15, $20, $30 million paycheck, and he comes back to them, and they go, hey, you're fighting with us? And he goes, well, no. I'm going to fight Anthony Joshua, and if you don't let me, if you tell me no, I'm just going to retire from everything and take this money and hit the road, or I fight Anthony Joshua. And, I mean, if he does competitive at all with that, short of – I mean, even if he gets knocked out cold, I don't know if he comes back to MMA. I don't see why, because there's always going to be another boxing match that's going to pay more than MMA for him. I mean, You know what would, even if he fought like a Wilder, he'd still clear 5-6 million, I imagine. And that's way more than he's going to make in an MMA fight. So I don't even know why he would ever venture back, short of just being demolished in this fight and maybe being demolished in a future fight. But Henan Fahea, I mean, I'm an MMA crazy guy and I barely know the dude. Like, I just don't see him coming back for that. I see it more likely him pulling a Kyla Harrison and him walking out on PFL, going back to the UFC and going, hey, what are you going to do about it? I'm fighting John Jones. Or I'm
that's exactly what I was thinking. He might do that and just go back to the UFC, and Dana White will take him. I mean, you know, the TKO, Ari Emanuel is going to jump in like, hey, let him back in. You know, there's money to be made there.
Well, he shows up. PFL sues UFC. UFC goes, okay, we'll go into lawsuit for 1,000 years. We've got 18 billion. You've got 200 million. Let's see who, you know. Meanwhile, Ngannou's fighting on UFC pay-per-views, and you know, and then he retires, and PFL has no say anyway. So, I mean, they just let Harrison do it right now. So it seems like the door is kind of open for that to be exploited. I'm surprised more fighters, honestly. I think we will see more fighters doing it if PFL doesn't get their act together. I think you'll see the Bellator guys just showing up at other organizations going, saying, hey, what are you going to do? You're not getting fights.
And that's kind of the vibe I got from the fighters that I talked to that were, you know, they're all being told to sit and wait, you know, especially in this first quarter. And a lot of them, you know, you're a pro fighter. You know, there is an end point of your career. You don't really have time to sit and wait. Kayla Harrison knew that from the door. That's why she walked. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a lot more Bellator names kind of saying, yeah, fuck this PFL nonsense. I'll fight who, you know, let me go. I'll go fight Cage Titans as long as they're paying me. I just want to backtrack to something you mentioned. You mentioned PBC, and I know they're supposed to be going on Prime Video. What's up with their broadcast? Like, I feel like, you know, with the whole Showtime thing, I mean, Bellator was part of that too, with Showtime Boxing going away, the whole Paramount freaking selling off everything and just kind of closing up shop, PBC events, like is it as bleak as it looks to someone like me that's kind of like on the outside but kind of notices it, or what do you think? Does PBC? I feel like they had a brief comeback in our Page Two Sports days versus to where they are now. Like are they folding? What's the deal with them?
Well, I mean, the thing with Al Heyman, who obviously he owns the BBC, he's the main guy, but he's always in the shadows. You never hear about him. You know, he's the interview in boxing that everybody would love to get, because he never talks. You never see him. I've seen him once in person. I saw him at Staples Center in the back. He was like through a door and I saw him, but you know, it seems like it's bleak, but their first event is scheduled for March 30th is between Keith Thurman and Tim Zhu at 154 pounds, super welterweight. Mm-hmm. And it's in Las Vegas. But Amazon hasn't really promoted it, on their social channels. Yeah. The only time they really promoted the partnership with PBC was on the day that the announcement was made about the partnership.
Yeah.
But they haven't promoted. I think they've like retweeted maybe a couple things, but they haven't really promoted the first event. Maybe they might do it closer in a week or two. But you would think with the reach that they have, you know, they'd be promoting it. Like, for example, there's a fight. So Top Rank has a deal also with Amazon Prime, but for Japan, because they have a fighter, Naoya Inoue, who's undefeated, and he's arguably the best fighter in the world, according to some people. And he's from Japan, but he makes so much money in Japan, he never fights out of Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And Top Rank has a deal with Amazon Prime Video to show his fights out there on Amazon Prime Video when he fights. Amazon Prime Video was promoting that this week. I think there's a press conference for that fight this week, and they were promoting it. It was in Japanese, but you know, they were still promoting it. I mean, Japan has a dedicated fan base. So I don't know, maybe PBC in a couple weeks is going to be the same thing. Maybe the fight week, they're going to be promoting it. But if you kind of speculate and you kind of read between the lines, you know, there's been some some details, you know, in reports saying that PBC doesn't have an actual budget from Amazon, that it's more of like a rights deal.
Yeah, just to show it. Yeah. That's
yeah. What I heard too. And Amazon's just like, hey, we'll give you our platform. We'll put it on our platform, but you guys have to like pay for it or something. I mean, I'm sure they have something. I'm sure there's something going on, but I think it's safe to say that they don't have the budget that they had with Showtime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Showtime gave them a big budget. And I believe Showtime also contributed a lot to the fighter purses. So, you know, Paramount was, you know, the parent company. Yeah. So they have deep pockets as well. So, you know, I mean, it looks bleak, you know, and PBC has been on numerous TV networks in the United States. If you name it, they've probably been on it. NBC, ESPN,
Fox Sports, Fox. Yeah.
Yeah, there was a channel called Bounce TV. They were on there, you know, and yeah, obviously, I mean, they're not on those channels anymore. And, you know, a case in point, this last one was Showtime. And Showtime, just like HBO, was one of the staples. So, you know, the track record isn't that good. But, you know, Al Heyman's been around for a long time. And the thing is, people speculate and, you know, about him and what he does or what he doesn't do. He's a smart guy. You know, he always figures out a way to keep it moving forward. So I think the March 30th Amazon, the first event that they have with Amazon, is going to be a very, very big deal, not only for the boxing world, but for, you know, combat sports, because they have the president of Showtime Sports, who no longer works there, Steven Espinoza, is now running the production team for PBC. So he said in interviews already that they're doing the production on their own. So he's kind of implying that Amazon's not contributing to the production. It's PBC who's running it, and Steven Espinoza is the one leading it. So I'm sure you guys, you know, you guys have been to a ton of fights. Like that's a big deal. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of logistics. So I think March 30th is going to be a very, very important day for PBC, and then Amazon, I'm sure, is going to be closely watching, especially to see how the ratings do. I mentioned the whole Canelo thing, they reportedly split like a week or two ago, and then there was reports the last couple of days saying, oh, they're back at the negotiation table. I said this yesterday on our podcast, The Last Round, that, you know, maybe Amazon jumped in and talked to Al Heyman and said, hey, what happened? How come you lost the biggest star? You know, go try to get him back. You know, I mean,
yeah.
If my television broadcast partner comes to me and says, hey, what are you doing? Go talk to him. You know?
Yeah. Like, no, we've seen that happen.
I would go talk to him.
We saw that happen with COVID when Dana White wanted to have the event in, the California casino?
The casino?
Palace.
Yeah. And then ESPN was the one that shut that down. So, I could definitely see that being the case. I mean, really quick, just because we're past the halfway point here, and we do have to kind of talk about UFC 299 before we close it up. But your prediction, I mean, you're the boxing guy. You know more about the fighters. And again, like you said, you did your temperature check with the fan base. How do you think this goes between Ngannou and Joshua this weekend?
I think AJ wins by decision. He's always been a slow starter. At the beginning of his fights, like I said, especially after Andy Ruiz. So he's going to feel it out the first couple rounds because he knows that Ngannou is a powerful guy. So he's going to feel him out the first couple rounds. And, you know, there's going to be some pretty big shots exchanged. I think the more powerful ones by AJ to Ngannou. But I think AJ wins on points by unanimous decision. So, and I think, you know, Ngannou's going to obviously try to, you know, get some type of momentum going. You know, if I'm sure him and his team or himself is like, hey, if you can knock him down too, you've knocked down the two best heavyweights in the world, you know, even if you lose. So, you know, I mean, does he, they're both getting paid so much. You know, I mean, what do you guys, does Ngannou have anything to lose?
No,
not at all. I mean, do you, I mean, from your perspective, do you think Josh was taking him lightly like the way Fury did? Or do you think he's taking him a little serious?
No, I don't think so. I think Fury fighting him before is a good barometer for Anthony Joshua. And, you know, he saw the criticism afterwards saying, oh, you know, Fury didn't train as hard and he got knocked down. And, you know, people were like, oh, I can't believe Fury got knocked down by a guy in his first professional fight coming out from coming over from another sport. So I think AJ is using that as, you know, probably like caution. He's already a cautious guy in the ring, but I'm pretty sure he's always been a pretty intelligent fighter. So I'm pretty sure he's taking that as feedback. And I would expect him to be a little bit more prepared than Fury was.
Yeah, I think that that's likely. I guess with Joshua and when I've seen him in like, I feel like if you hurt him, he maybe, you know, fades a little bit, or he doesn't maybe have that like comeback gear that some guys, you know, that he doesn't have the gaudy kind of, you know, taste, eat a lot of blood. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm forgetting some fights, but it seems like whenever he's really tasted his own blood, it's usually been kind of the downside of a fight for him. And I don't, you know, again, unless I'm thinking of a bloodbath that he came walking out of.
Well, if you remember the Klitschko fight that he had, I think in 2017, Klitschko caught him and like almost ended the fight. And then the bell rang. And then I think a round or two later, then AJ caught him and then stopped him. So
That's right.
You know, he does have the fortitude to come back from damage like that. But as I mentioned, you know, I think after the Andy Ruiz fight that he had in New York City, I think he's been a lot more cautious. So when he gets hit like that, I think he might be a little bit more vulnerable than he was in the past. But he's still dangerous. You know, he's
6'6",
270, you know, so he could, and he throws like a missile. I mean, if you see his punches, he could hurt you. So, but he is a lot more cautious. So I think Ngannou, if he sees a moment of vulnerability like that, he needs to capitalize.
Yeah, and I think he learned a lesson too from the Andy Ruiz fight, because he admittedly said, but he publicly said that he took Ruiz lately because of his build and, you know, the physique of the man, and took him lightly. And I think then obviously he was able to turn it around in the rematch. And I think he learned. I think that was a lesson for him to not underestimate anybody, regardless of their experience. And you know, Ngannou's obviously not built like Ruiz, but, you know, the one punch is probably, like Matt said, the one punch is probably enough for him to say, okay, let me make sure I'm cardio's good and defense is good. And, you know, let me bring my A game to this guy, because he's not coming to lose. I mean, they're both going to get paid, but, you know, they also know that they have to perform at their best, because it is at the level that it is. Well, yeah, I mean,
are any of them losers if you're getting paid that much?
No, not at all. So, I mean, with we got about like 10 minutes or so left to do some really quick. We'll just look at the last three fights of UFC 299. Let me bring it up on screen here. We can do some quick predictions because that pay-per-view is on Saturday. And, you know, we would be remiss if we kind of didn't mention it. We'd get flamed. With the current UFC fan base that's out there now, they would never let us live it down if we didn't at least talk about the a part of this pay-per-view. And the last three fights are kind of like what's on my radar. I know Matt and I have talked about this fight in particular here. I've even had training partners asking me about a prediction earlier today. I looked and there's still no odds up, which I find interesting. Kevin Holland versus Michael Venom Page, who comes from Bellator. I mean, it's been a year since he fought MMA, making his UFC debut this weekend against Kevin Holland. I don't know. Well, Matt, you can go first on this.
What do you think? I mean, I like Kevin Holland, but I think he's like more of a heavy gatekeeper, and I think that's just what he's become. I mean, he's taken fights recently where he's kind of even admitted like winning's not the highest priority. It's getting paid. Not that he doesn't go out there trying to win, but I think a couple fights ago he made it clear that getting his bag was the number one priority, and anything that came along with that was cool, which is great. They're prized fighters. That's what he's going for. I think Michael Page is a reading through Twitter, it's like he's like UFC fans' worst nightmare, because all they've done is heard about him, but none of them ever saw him fight. And now they're confused because his record's so good, and people are talking about all his knockout, you know, his crazy highlight knockouts. He doesn't have 100 knockouts, but the 5-6 that he really had in Bellator were devastating. I hope Paige wins. I mean, seeing everybody not know who Douglas Lima was, claiming to be MMA fans, hard for me to swallow. Just because it's so such ignorance on fans' part to see him get knocked out by Douglas Lima, and A, not know he won the rematch, but B, not know that Douglas Lima is, you know, one of the top 25 fighters in the history of the sport to not fight in the UFC. So I mean, you start talking really good championship level guys. I hope Paige wins. I think Colwyn can win if he grapples and turn this into a boring, let me hang on you until I drag you down and, you know, maybe beat you up on the ground. But man, if it stays standing, I think Paige lands something. I know he lost to Mike Perry in bare knuckle, but Mike Perry's Mike Perry, and a bulldog in bare knuckle is been a little bit of everything else. I hope Paige wins. I hope he wins, not because of everything I just said. I just hope he wins because people have talked about him going to the UFC for a long time, and I'd like to see him have a couple successful nights where, you know, we get to kind of thank the rest of the MMA world for helping develop these other talent that we get to see showcased on a huge pay-per-view.
Danny, I don't know if you're familiar with Mr. MVP, but if you want to share on this, Or just do like an educated guess.
Is that MVP? Because I've heard that name.
Yes, that is.
That's him?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I'm a fan of the name. you know, I didn't know that was him.
But now,
I mean, obviously you can see MP, and there's obviously a V there somewhere. But I've heard that before, on the combat sports Twitter world. When fans are tweeting like, "Oh, MVP, so and so," just looking at the records,
Holland
is the United States.
Yeah, Holland's fought much better competition in the last hand. In the UFC. To be fair, Paige had probably like 4 really really tough fights in Bellator, and he won probably went 3-1 in those real tough fights. Off the top of my head, I can't even think who his second loss was. It might have been even before.
So he lost to obviously Lima, and the other loss was Logan Storley.
There you go. He got wrestled for 5.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's so guys I train with were asking me, because they want to do parlays and stuff to bet on these fights. And I told them, they asked me about this one because for the same reason, they not very familiar with Michael Page. And I had to think about it for a little bit, but I had to remember. I said, okay, who were his losses against? So if Kevin Holland plays it smart and does, you know, worries less about talking trash and actually fighting him technically, meaning putting pressure on him, using wrestling and stuff like that, not giving Michael Venn and Page the range that he needs to do all that funny striking stuff that he does, his fancy striking, I think he can win it. I think he can do exactly what Logan Storley did. He may not be the class of wrestler that Logan Storley is, but the blueprint is out there on how to beat Michael Page. And there's more than enough guys in the UFC that can bring that type of wrestling to him and add a couple of losses to his record. That's my technical prediction. I'm with you though, Matt. I would like to see him win. I'd like to see him. I just wrote a piece over at My MMA News today, where he's looking at eventually fighting Leon Edwards and doing that at a stadium in the UK. And he talked about how him and Paul Daly should have done that, but they did that over here in Mohegan Sun, and how UK MMA fans got robbed of something that could have been really good homegrown. And I kind of like the sound of that too. Kevin Holland's ranked number 13, so he's got a ways to go. Bilal Muhammad's definitely deserves his shot at the welterweight title. So there's a lot to be done before he even gets there. So this Saturday will definitely be the litmus test that we need to see where he goes. This lightweight bout, Dustin Poirier versus Benoit Saint Denis. I don't know. What do you think, Matt? I mean, I'm obviously no secret. I'm going to be picking Poirier.
Yeah, I mean, Saint Denis is a big time puncher. He's a pressure fighter. Poirier, obviously coming off of his the McGregor saga, and Chandler, and all the hard hitters of the lightweight division. I mean, everything, it's one of those things. Do you keep with the old guard? Do you go with Dustin Poirier and go, hey, the great keeps winning, and he, you know, great, maybe the extremely good fighter, is he Hall of Fame? He will be in the Hall of Fame for UFC. Mm-hmm. You know, is he in the Hall? You know, he's not a top 10 all time. He's not a top 20 all time, but he's extremely regarded fighter and has a lot of accolades. Or do you go with Denise, who might be the new Taporia in lightweight and, kind of shock the world and make a big name for himself. I tend to go with the older guys just because until I see it happen, it's hard for me to envision a world where, Poirier's laying unconscious in this thing. And I do feel like someone's likely probably going down.
Yeah.
A 3-round co-main, or did we get a 5-round for this one? Let me double check that. They do it at 5 rounds. So even with it being 5-round co-main event now, I tend to lean towards a finish.
And Poirier's the underdog too.
That's what I mean. But wait, we'll go back down to it. What was the odds? It's gotta be close though.
Plus 142.
170. So almost a 2-1 favorite for Denise. I mean, I go with Poirier just because I haven't seen him fight bad in a while. I know Gaethje kicked him in the head kick, but nobody thought Justin Gaethje was going to throw a head kick. Gaethje probably didn't think he was even going to throw a head kick. It just happened. So I'll go with Poirier, but I will not be surprised if we see a changing of the guard here. And, the guys from France, we just had the guy from Spain win, if it goes to a close decision, the UFC's hand wants the guy from France to win. So I hope politics don't come into play there, but I'll go with Poirier to get a finish. I'm going to go like 4th round, maybe early 5 when he kind of, because I don't think Denise has ever had a 5-round fight. So that's another thing that we'll be looking for, working ahead to. So we'll see how he goes into late rounds.
Danny, I want you to chime in on this, but a little sub question. Poirier's got some decent hands for boxing. I feel like if he went to boxing, he'd be all right.
Yeah, probably. He's obviously been in some high profile fights. I think, not just following what you guys said, I think I'd probably pick him too, just based on hearing you guys talk right now. But also, I'm kind of looking at it from the outside looking in, and I revert back to what Mayweather always says when people say, "Oh yeah, I got the best of him in sparring. I was his sparring partner." And then Mayweather says, like, yeah, they can be the best fighter in the gym, but I'm the best fighter under the lights. So Poirier's been under, the high profile lights so far. So sometimes that's an X factor. And I don't think, and you guys could correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think Saint Denis has had those high profile events yet, right?
No. Brightest lights he's had will be Saturday night. So that's the other thing. You just don't know, I think Poirier is just that dog, and I don't know if he's, I don't know if Denise has what it takes to finish him off.
I do have a question mark, even though I'm picking Poirier. I do have the question mark against his name because the last guy he fought was Justin Gaethje, and we all know that Justin Gaethje don't leave people walking around normal after they win or lose.
It's valid. Most of the guys don't rebound real great after a fight with him, so that's a good point. Main event time.
Go ahead, Matt. I mean, I think
Sean O'Malley, surprised. Marlon Vera too. Pride of Ecuador versus Pride of Ronald McDonald. But I don't know. We've since day one, since the Contender Series O'Malley, we've always said the same thing. He's not necessarily our cup of tea, but the guy's got a tremendous skill set. perhaps, I mean, a skill set that could take him a long, long way in the sport. We both probably underestimated his grappling until we saw him compete in Quintet, where he went on and submitted multiple opponents in a row. This is a rematch of a fight where he suffered an injury. Vera won the fight the first time around, but O'Malley was kind of rallying, and then he got injured, and Vera ended up winning. I want Marlon Vera to win. I want Marlon Vera to win, A, because I have a buddy in Ecuador who would go nuts, and I know that that country's going through a lot of crap right now, so just something like that would always be, I imagine, is always good for the innocent people of a country when cartels and all that other crap's going on around you. So I wouldn't mind seeing that just for the good people out there. And I'd like to watch O'Malley lose, but I don't see it happening. I think O'Malley, goes, laser punch mode. And I think he damages Vera and wins the fight.
That's pretty much like what my pick was going to be, with the same warning that you gave. Like, you know, I say it every time O'Malley fights, everybody gets distracted by all his gimmicks and the stuff he does on social media. You know, he's coming in with pink trunks and pink hair on Saturday night. You know, it's all mind games at the end of the day. I mean, the kid fought his way up through LFA, came on through Contender Series, and he's in the training room. The things that he does, especially the way he beat who I didn't want him to beat, Aljamain Sterling, but the way that he beat Aljamain Sterling was it shows that he does his homework despite what you see him post on social media. So it just adds to the stuff that where people talk about how all the stuff you see on social media, it's not real life. And I think the same can be said for what you see him do. That's all mind games. That's all that's all distraction. That's all a ruse. The kid's actually a good martial artist, and I can see him winning. However, based on the last fight, that's the fight that I always think of when you think about his durability and the damage that he can absorb. You know, he had some issues with the bottom of his foot when he first came into the UFC, and then when he fought this fight, the injury that they've been sharing that clip a lot today on social media. Because folks are saying, like, okay, was it an injury because of just, wear and tear on his body? Or was it because of the leg kicks that Chito Vera was throwing at him? Because if that's the case, then that's sound technique from Chito. And that's how you win the fight. That's how he wins again.
And he finished him in the first round. He finished him at the end of the first round, but he TKO'd him on the ground after O'Malley's legs kind of gave out. It's also the second time O'Malley's legs gave out. If you remember Andre Sakamatooth in one of early fights for O'Malley.
Yeah.
O'Malley blew his leg out or broken bone in his leg. And it was one of the worst fight IQ fights ever where Sakamatooth didn't wrestled with him, as opposed to making him stand up and realizing that had he just done that, O'Malley wouldn't have been able to answer the call.
Yeah.
Couldn't stand up. So he kind of dodged a loss on that night. I think if Vera uses a really good game plan and attacks the legs, I think that might be a pathway, seeing that it worked for him the first time. And that's kind of been his weakness. I mean, O'Malley is a long rangey ectomorph, I believe is the word that you use all the time, Ed. There is that, but his legs, he's had leg surgeries, knee surgeries. So I feel like there is something there. I'm never for like trying to injure somebody per se, but it might be the pathway to victory would be to attack the legs here. And, if something gives out, something gives out and opens the door for Vera to pound him out again.
Danny, you want to chime in on this last one?
I wanted to ask you guys, because Matt was saying that the first fight had ended pretty early, I think the first round or not long after.
Very end of the first round. Yeah.
Did we get in that short amount of time, did we get any sense of maybe who had the advantage? Just kind of preliminarily?
It was a little bit of both. I mean, O'Malley claims like he was rallying, but it was so early in the fight it's hard to say that. But I think just the general consensus was that O'Malley was gonna win the fight. So I think a lot of people hold that in that, well, if he didn't hurt his knee in the first round, he was going to win the second and third round. I think there's a lot more of that than the actual reality of it. I mean, Chito did TKO him in the first round, but there was a knee injury.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where it's a, again, it's kind of where we're at here. I'm picking O'Malley to win. I imagine if that first fight had gone without an injury, I kind of lean the same way.
Yeah.
Because Vera doesn't come off as like a, he doesn't. To me, there's nothing like overly special about any aspect of his game. He's just a really good fighter. Whereas O'Malley like has these flashes where you're like, that's something we see once every 10 years.
And you know, O'Malley kind of O'Malley does this thing where when he fights, he's very like he's very kind of like wavy and floaty. Like it's almost like a like he does this thing where it looks like he's falling a little. And it's more just
Silva style kind.
Yeah, yeah. It draws you in almost, and it draws in his opponents in that. That's kind of like it's what he did to Aljamain Sterling. Like Sterling was you know he lures him into a sense of like let me charge in at him, and then he catches him with a nice really nice counter or a stabbing. You know they call them teep kicks, front snap kicks, whatever you want to call it in the midsection, and that's how he sets up a lot of his finishes and. Because he's very long and rangy like that, but he also knows his opponents know that, and they like to make them. He likes to play their pressure game, almost use the pressure they're putting, but use it against him. That's what I'm saying. He's a very cerebral fighter, and a lot of folks kind of miss that with all his goofiness. So, it's an interesting main event. I mean, people knock the fight because of him and all that other shit that he does, but he's an entertaining fighter to watch, and that's why Dana White said when he hit. Put the belt around him. You're going to make a lot of money here, kid. So,
I think they are overhyping his fame a little bit, though.
Yeah,
he's not. You know, when you're at an event and he shows up, the crowd cheers, but then they'll flash to somebody else. They'll flash to Gaethje, and the crowd will go nuts. You know what I mean? So they're kind of hyping him up like he's the next McGregor, but he's not really there yet. Fighting skill wise, he might be, but. Nothing is matching near the hype that McGregor brought in.
Not the fame, man. No, definitely not. We don't have any stars like that right now in the UFC. But we only got a few minutes left, Danny. So why don't you let us know what's on deck with your podcast and what you got doing with any other projects you're working on?
You know, we release it weekly, just like you guys do. We've been doing it since 2018. Myself and my co-host Michael Shepherd. He's English, but he lives over here in the United States. So you got a Mexican American and me and an English guy who lives in the United States. So it's a pretty interesting combination. And he knows a lot more about the UK scene than I do because he's a little bit more plugged in there. And then so it's a good balance. We have guests and we have, you know, just regular shows like these where we just review the fights and discuss the news and preview the fights. This week, we already recorded an episode. We released it. We interviewed a sports and entertainment attorney. His name is Kurt Emhoff. He's been a boxing manager for several years as well. He's not really in the sport anymore in an official capacity, but he still watches it. He's still a big fan. He's still plugged in and knows a lot of the details behind it. So we got him on to talk about the latest news, previews, and reviews, and also touch on the Canelo Alvarez situation with PBC and the contracts and, you know, what maybe deal he's going to get. And then also there was a young fighter from Top Rank who got arrested in Michigan recently for a police chase. And he's an Olympian. And he ran from the police for like 6 miles and he was arrested. So, who better to have on than an attorney to kind of elaborate on something like that?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So, that was a good episode, but yeah, check us out. We've had numerous guests. Eddie Hearn's been on. Ruiz was on just before he got the AJ fight, like 2 weeks before.
Nice.
So we've had
you've talked with Andy Foster a lot about like commission related stuff in California, and I know he's chimed in on combat sports overall, which are probably my favorite episodes of yours that I've listened to. So
you guys should reach out to him. He's very friendly with the media, so you guys should reach out and get him on. He's very friendly, and he'll, you know, as long as he can put into his schedule, he'll do an interview.
Awesome. Well, fans can follow the show at Combat Hour on Twitter, Coast to Coast Combat Hour on Instagram. Follow me, Matthew Hawkins, at MMAHawk21 on Twitter and Instagram. Follow Ed at Carbazol on Twitter, Carbeerzol on Instagram, and Old Head Carb on Twitch. Danny, thank you for your time, man. We've been chatting about wanting to get you on here, and it worked out conveniently with an MMA versus boxing matchup this week. And we just appreciate your time. We know you're a busy man, and keep doing what you're doing, man. Enjoy your podcast. And, you know, I think boxing gets a bad rap among the MMA people, and I'd like to see it become kind of a more united community where we just realize that these are all just a bunch of badass dudes putting gloves on, or sometimes bare knuckle, and just putting on a show for everybody. So let's just appreciate for what we're getting to witness. And
It's all fights at the end of the day.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, it's all combat. It's funny because me and Danny used to talk about that all the time when we were writing for a lot of the same outlets together. We never got it. We never understood it. it's all the same commissions. It's all, you guys are sometimes fighting in the same venues. Like, what's the fucking problem? But
you know, one last tidbit I wanted to mention. You guys know that when WWE goes to California, that they pay a commission fee to the California State Athletic Commission, but the commission isn't there present.
That's funny.
Yeah, weird. they've done that for years, because the California Commission used to show up to their events and realize that they didn't know what to do because it's not real.
Yeah.
And the WWE, ever for years since then, whenever they have shows in California, they pay the fee.
Wow.
But the commission doesn't go.
Is that just to to act like we're more legitimate? Like, hey, we're sanctioned? Or is it kind of just a slap in the face to them even trying to get involved? And hey, you want our money, just take it?
I think it's more, if you ask me, I think it's just more like,
palm greasing.
Just stay away from regulating us. Here's some money and stay at arm's length.
Palms. Yeah. That's all it is. That's what I think. I mean, we always say it's mafia shit. We say that almost quarterly on this podcast. But by the way, folks, link to Danny's podcast is in the description for your folks that want to check it out. So make sure you go check it out.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a good night.
Peace.